Today on the 21st, we're still talking about the insurrection at the U.S. Capitol. Last week, we heard from the experts. Now it's your turn. How are you processing what happened? What do you think of the police response to the incursion? And what do you make of calls to try to remove the president? Our phone lines are open, 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. This is your chance to talk out loud about what happened with your fellow Illinoisans. We'll be joined for the hour by longtime Sun-Times columnist Mary Mitchell and psychologist Cynthia Lubin-Langtu is back as well. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about the riot at the Capitol for the hour today on the 21st, which is a production of Illinois Public Media, airing on WILL in Urbana, WUIS in Springfield, WGLT in Normal, WCBU in Peoria, and WNIJ in DeKalb. But first, the news. From Illinois Public Media, this is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. There are certain events in American history for which one only needs to say the date. December 7th, 1941, November 22nd, 1963, April 4th, 1968, and September 11th, 2001. Now we can add to that list January 6th, 2021, when a mob of people supporting the president broke into the U.S. Capitol. They were armed with baseball bats and pipes, bear spray and spears. Some were wearing bullet-resistant vests and military helmets. They carried handcuffs, and they built a gallows outside. One Capitol police officer was murdered, struck with a fire extinguisher. He died from the mortal wound. Several other people died from medical emergencies, and one of the insurrectionists was shot and killed as she attempted to climb through a window close to where members of Congress were being protected. As I watched the events unfolding last Wednesday, I felt it, literally, a tightness in my chest. And that feeling has come back again as I followed the coverage. Watching a video of the shooting, reading about lone Capitol police officers, especially those who are African American, endure racist abuse and fearing for their safety. And I know that in how I feel, I'm not alone. And now we want to hear from you. The number to call today is 800-222-9455. We're doing something a little different with today's show, an open forum for all Illinoisans to talk about how they're feeling, how they're processing, what they think should happen next. Our phone lines are open now and for the hour, 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. While we're waiting, over the weekend, we asked on social media for Illinoisans to share how they're feeling in this moment. Here's a selection of some of the voicemails we got.
This is Wendy calling from Rock City, Illinois.
Hi, this is Jane from Champaign.
Hi, my name is Laura. I'm calling from Rockford, Illinois.
Ron, Paris, Illinois.
I am so embarrassed by the way these radicals behaved and overtook our Capitol building. This insurrection, to me, is unconscionable. Also, I think Trump needs to be removed.
I think the 25th Amendment route is the only real way to go. We can't, in good conscience, do a reasonable job of impeachment in less than 2 weeks. But we can temporarily suspend the president's duties with the 25th Amendment.
The more and more I'm processing what happened last Wednesday, I not only feel that the president should be impeached, but I also feel that the senators that supported the to reject the electoral vote and the representatives should be censured by Congress.
Thank God Trump was voted out of office. He was unfit to run in any public office. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you to everyone who called in last weekend and last week. If you want to call in now, the number again, 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Joining us for our conversation today is Mary Mitchell. She's a columnist and a member of the editorial board at the Chicago Sun-Times. She was also recently inducted into the National Association of Black Journalists Hall of Fame. Mary, thanks for being on and congratulations.
Thank you very much for the invitation.
And we're also joined by Cynthia Lubin-Langtu. She's a doctorate in psychology and a professor at the Chicago School of Professional Psychology. Professor Langtu, welcome back to the show. Thanks for being on with us again.
Thank you for having me for this continued important conversation.
So, Mary, can I begin with you? How did you first react to the insurrection in the Capitol when you saw the news reports coming out of Washington last week? What was going through your mind?
So really, when I saw the images, I thought, this is what happens when you allow on a smaller scale, when you allowed protesters or demonstrators to crash through barriers, to burn down police stations, to go into Capitol government buildings and carrying guns and carrying weapons. When that happened and that was allowed to happen, it set the stage for what we saw last week at the Capitol. It almost said, this is just protest. This is freedom of speech. People have a right to gather and to assembly, ignoring the fact that you don't have a right to violent assembly and to this violent protest in which lives are put at risk and government buildings are burned down or people try to destroy government buildings. When you allow that to happen, you're just setting the stage for what happened last week.
And Professor Langtu, I wonder if you can talk. We our time was relatively short last week. I didn't get to ask you, how are you feeling? How did you handle the news? How did you process the news as it was unfolding last Wednesday?
Yeah, that's a wonderful question. And the first thing that I highlighted when you were speaking last week was how you described the tightness in your chest. And I so appreciated that because so many times we experience our emotions viscerally or physically first. And I remember just feeling shaky. You know, I too felt shaky and my stomach was in knots. And a lot of thoughts were happening, but I remember just wanting to be inside of my body and let myself calm down. And so I started doing some deep breathing. And I remember seeing Bishop Curry praying, right, about the situation that was happening. And I remember hearing his words, and those words were very soothing. And I thought to myself, this is what I need. I need to calm down my body as I'm watching, and then I needed to turn it off so that I could come back to calming my body so that I could really be able to take in the information. But it was overwhelming and it was a lot to take in emotionally and to view it as well. But I found myself doing some deep breathing, right? And resting in Bishop Curry's prayers and listening and allowing myself to slow down so that I could take the information in a way that I could understand and that was meaningful.
Okay, let's go to the phones now at 800-222-9455. We've got a couple of calls on the line. I'm going to go first to line three, Mike from Northern Illinois. Thanks for calling in. Go ahead.
Yeah, good morning, everybody. I just wanted to say I don't really see how our president is allowed to keep doing this. The precedent that it sets, rather, allowing him to get away with this, and then say he gets impeached, he's still allowed to remain in office. I just think that some new safeguards need to be put in place to keep this from ever happening again. And I want to know, where do you guys think we go from here?
Okay, thanks for the call, Mike. Mary, I wonder, what is your perspective? There's been a lot of talk about invoking the 25th Amendment, but the vice president seems that he's not on board for that. And now the House, we see the U.S. House is moving towards another impeachment. But the analysis I've seen says, you know, the Senate may not be very likely to convict and the timeline would be extraordinary. I mean, he's only in office for another week and a half. Where do you think we go?
Know, so when you think about it, when you look at the options, I would say, whether you're talking about the 25th Amendment or you're talking about impeachment, it is too little, too late. That is not really going to hold President Donald Trump accountable for his role in inciting an insurrection. It will be it will give the Senate and it will give the House the ability to say we did something, but they did it much too late. But Donald Trump needs to be held accountable for the loss of life, not just the damage that was done, not just the property damage, but the loss of life that occurred because of that insurrection. If we believe that he inspired that he caused that he egged it on, then he should be held accountable for those lives lost.
I want to go to the phones again. 800-222-9455 is the number. Lou is on line 2 from Central Illinois. Lou, thanks for calling in.
Yeah. Let me start off by saying, you know, I definitely don't agree with what happened on Wednesday. You know, I think that, you know, whoever was part of that really did exactly what we're against. But I just don't see where this is so much worse, or the way that everybody's making it sound, this is so much worse than the riots that have been going on for months that have taken way more innocent lives and killed way more police officers.
Okay, Lou, thank you for calling in. Mary, I'm glad he brought that up, because we have heard from politicians drawing these parallels about, you know, what about the Black Lives Matter protest? They burned down a Target. They, you know, in Minnesota. Okay. I would like you to respond to that, if you would, please.
Because I think there's a big difference between, I'm not saying any of it is right. I'm not condone any type of violence or any type of violence demonstration. But I think there's a big difference between tearing down the Target or looting a Target than running into and tearing down or trying to tear down the Capitol, where legislators and elected officials are trying to take care of the people's business. Those are two different things, okay? I also think that it is, when you talk about, I don't have any statistics, but when you talk about how many people were killed, we had a young woman that was killed, and we're calling her an insurrectionist, but some people will call her a demonstrator. She was killed trying to participate as she participated in this this insurrection. You had a police officer who was killed because of this, and you had several people who died of medical emergencies. That's huge. I don't remember a protest that I've covered where so many people have died just in the protest. I don't recall doing that. I don't recall covering that. And so I don't have any statistics. I would like to see those statistics. If that's the case, then, you know, the caller had a valid point. But I just do not recall anything like this happening in my lifetime.
And Mary, I wonder if you see any difference in sort of the goals, whatever they might have been, of Black Lives Matter protesters versus, and when I say whatever they might have been, of the people who were going into the Capitol. Now, not everybody had baseball bats and handcuffs, but
right.
a lot of people did. And I you know, yeah, go ahead.
I just, for me, the thing that struck me most was, yes, I think that that Black Lives protesters would not have gotten past one barrier. I think they would have been met with a lot of force, and that they would have been challenged, and they would not have gotten this far if we were talking about a Black Lives Matter protest. In this protest, or in this insurrection that we're calling it now, it seemed to me that the police was far too willing to just turn tail and run and let them have their way. I could not believe what I was seeing. I couldn't believe the images of people scaling walls. I couldn't believe the images of people breaking down and hammering on the door and causing it to crash in so that they can get at what? They weren't protesting because of police violence. They were protesting because of lies. And I think that's a huge difference here. When a person is killed by the police officer, there is a body, there is an incident, there is videotape. We look at that, we see that. But these people who were died in this insurrection died because of lies. There was no proof that there was any widespread vote fraud. There's no proof that the Democrats stole the election. So these people basically died in vain. And I think that's something that we need to remember.
I want to go back to the phone lines, and I should remind listeners, this is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We've just heard from Mary Mitchell. She's a columnist and editorial board member for the Chicago Sun-Times. We're also speaking with Professor Cynthia Lubin-Langtu, who's a clinical psychologist at the Chicago School of Professional Psychology. And I want to go now to line 1. Let's talk to Christine. Is it in Sibley, Illinois?
Savoy, Illinois.
Savoy. Oh, thank you.
Yes.
Go ahead.
I was completely shocked by what happened on Wednesday. my daughter had been warning me about this. My husband had said the night before, you know, I think there's going to be violence. And I just poo-pooed it. I just thought that they were ridiculous. And as the events unfolded, I just, even talking about it now, you know, my stomach is churning. What's really, really, really concerns me is now I'm hearing from the Republican Party that, you know, we need to move on, we need to be, you know, bipartisan, and, you know, sort of, I feel, and I'm afraid that it's going to be brushed under the rug. We haven't seen bipartisanship on part of the GOP, frankly, for the last 12 years, reaching across the aisle, and this was a shocking, shocking event that, as the previous person said, was based on lies. There was no stealing of an election, and I'm fearful about how we're going to go forward because I just don't feel like the people in power on the Republican side really want to face the facts of what they have aided and abetted Donald Trump to be able to do for the last, well, when he started the whole birther thing.
Sure.
Sorry, I'm really worked up here.
No, that's okay. I think we all are. Many of us are, at least. And that's why we are having this show today dedicated to this one topic. Christine in Savoy, thank you so much for calling in. And I want to pivot off that. We need to take a break. But for Professor Langtu, when we come back, I want to pivot off of what Christine was saying there and talk about collective unity and healing and whether that can come before accountability and justice and how those interrelate. This is the 21st. We're spending the hour talking about the insurrection in the Capitol in Washington last week. We have a number of callers on the line. Please stay with us. We will try and get to all our calls at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. More to come from Mary Mitchell, Professor Cynthia Langtu, and you after the break. This is the 21st. Stay with us. Welcome back to the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're spending the hour today taking your calls and talking through what happened last week at the U.S. Capitol. I'm calling it an insurrection. Some people have called it seditious behavior. A number of people have been arrested over the weekend. Very few were arrested in the initial melee there. The police seemed to be focusing. The police who were overwhelmed, I should say, the Capitol Police. And we've seen reporting that there was a tremendous lack of planning and foresight on their part in ignoring in intelligence warnings and social media posts that something like this could happen. They were focused on clearing the building, but we've seen in the last few days the individual who had stolen a podium with the speaker's logo on it, the individual who had his feet up on House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's desk have been arrested. There was a CEO from Northern Illinois who was arrested the day of. People came from all over the country for this. We're talking about this with you at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. And Mary Mitchell, she's a columnist and member of the editorial board at the Chicago Sun-Times, recent inductee into the National Association of Black Journalists Hall of Fame, and Professor Cynthia Lubin Langtu, who is a clinical psychologist and on the faculty at the Chicago School of Professional Psychology. And Professor Langtu, before the break, we heard from a caller, Christine in Savoy, who was concerned about talk of moving on in bipartisanship, which I think I heard more of that before the insurrection. We're hearing a little less of that now. But I wonder if you can talk about the relationship from a mental health and psychology standpoint, you know, to get to a collective unity, a collective healing. Can that come before accountability and justice? How do those things interrelate?
Yeah, those are wonderful questions. And I really love your perspective on the question of how, you know, can we move towards collective unity and healing? The answer to that, I think, is yes, right? And whether or not that can happen without accountability, I don't believe that it can. I don't believe that there can be reconciliation without a reckoning. And there are so many layers to which there needs to be a reckoning, right? Right now, we have the insurrection that happened in the Capitol last week. But this is couched in, you know, the COVID-19 response being politicized over the last couple of, over the last year, the health disparities and the health disparities and the deaths that have happened, and a lack of response to that. And then you've got, you know, the pain of this summer, and the death of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor. All of those are compounding and really present in the current time, right? And there needs to be a reckoning around all of those. And that reckoning, I believe, needs to happen with our elected officials, of course, but each and every one of us has a role in that reckoning as well. And I believe that that reckoning can happen if we're able to see each other, if we're able to provide empathy to and for each other, if we express a desire and willingness to hear each other's stories and perspectives, if we express a desire and willingness to acknowledge the pain that has been inflicted over the last years, but really over many, many years, and take appropriate responsibility and accountability. There's no true reconciliation without a reckoning, but I believe that that can happen. I believe that there are pieces of that that many, many folks have been trying to do, and I believe that we can. I know that we need to hold our elected officials accountable for that, but I know that we need to hold ourselves accountable, but also other leaders in our community accountable for doing that work as well.
And Mary Mitchell, I wonder what your perspective is on that. I mean, you've been covering movements for justice for a long time at the Chicago Sun-Times.
Correct. You know, I think it's very interesting what the professor has said when it comes to hearing each other's stories and having empathy. Because the one thing that really struck me last Wednesday, was in covering and all the coverage that I saw of the insurrection and of the protesters blatantly breaking the law and pushing their way into the Capitol building, there was an announcement that one woman had died, had been taken away in critical condition to the hospital. And that was it. The rest of the coverage was all about the insurrection. And I wondered, who was that young woman? Who was that woman who actually died in this protest? And why aren't we talking about her? Why is it assumed that nobody's going to care about her? I think when we talk about hearing each other's stories, the thing that bothers me here is that now that this incident has occurred, are we willing to put ourselves in the shoes of that young woman and have empathy for her, or is it going? Or she's going to be viewed like a George Floyd was during the Black Lives Matter movement, when people cared more about what was going on with the stores and the damage to the stores than they did George Floyd. That's where we're at. How are we going to be able to bridge that gap between, frankly, the races? Because the component of this insurrection that we aren't talking about is the fact that race was involved, that this was a protest that was led by allegedly white supremacists.
Yeah, and certainly elements of Proud Boys, and we saw the Confederate flag being paraded through the Capitol building there, and somebody else wearing a T-shirt that made a sort of made light of one of the Nazi concentration camps.
And I couldn't believe that we didn't report on anything underneath and underlying of this protest. And we needed to do that. We needed not to assume that every person out there was a Proud Boy or was a white supremacist, but these were people who were discontent to the point that they would take to the streets and try to destroy government property. I mean, I just think that we miss it when we don't get to those issues.
I want to go back to the phone lines now. at 800-222-9455 is the number. I'm going to go to line one. Darren calling in from Peoria. Darren, go ahead.
Yeah, first off, NPR, bad on you in the fact that you don't have a conservative Republican on the line to counter or to have voice in what's being said. Second off, when you're looking at the aspect of what happened at the Capitol, it comes to the point, I am a very conservative Republican, but at the same time, I'm not an avid Trump supporter. I'm more of a libertarian and believe in the Constitution. But everybody needs to understand at some point in time, you push back on a people hard enough, they're going to push back. And I'd like to hear a response from one of your commentators on why the voice of people that are, that run the conservative lines are not being heard right now. You have alienated almost 80 million people.
Okay, Darren, don't feel heard about what? What do you mean when you say you don't feel heard?
Well, what happened at the Capitol was, okay, it happened. You push on people hard enough, they will push back. Now, was it President Trump's fault? Not really. Was it the Republicans' fault? No, not really. Was it the fact that voters that believe in the lines that I do have been repressed and for the past 4 years have just been absolutely dismissed in that aspect or ignored or pushed aside? And where BLM, Antifa, AOC and the Squad and all that have been pushing this agenda upon us that a vast majority really don't want, if any politicians out there listening would go, oh my goodness, they really don't want this.
Okay, Darren,
so
thank
I'd
you.
I'd like to hear from a commentator.
Sure. Thanks for the call, Darren. Mary, I wonder if you want to respond to what Darren had to say there.
Well, I think I don't think I need to respond to that. I mean, that's justifying the same way you would not justify a demonstration on the part of Black Lives Matter that starts off peaceful and ends up violent. That you would not justify that behavior and say sometimes people, you know, you push them hard enough, they push back. It would be unacceptable, and you would understand that it's unacceptable. So why would anyone say that or try to justify what happened last week at the Capitol? It was just as unacceptable as any other violent protest. And I think that's the problem. I think it's easy for people to look at a Black Lives Matter protest and see a bunch of thugs out there and think that they're thugs. It's easy for them to do that than this to look at a bunch of white people carrying Confederate flags and say, and denouncing them as a bunch of racists. We don't do that. And so this caller really has bought into this whole narrative that it wasn't that bad. It was that bad.
Yeah, I keep coming to the idea that you know, people entered the Capitol building with baseball bats and wearing bulletproof vests and helmets and carrying handcuffs. And there was a gallows built outside. And some of them made a beeline for the Speaker's office and the Senate President's office. They seem to have at least some element. I'm not saying everybody there was, a sort of well-trained militia, you know, self-styled
exactly.
militia member. But, you know, some number of people seemed to have, and even legislators, Republicans, as well as Democrats have said, we really dodged something much, much more tragic happening last Wednesday.
Because we didn't see them, because they did not see these protesters as a threat as much as they saw other protesters. And I'm going to go back to the Black Lives Matter movement, those protesters as being a threat. They didn't see these people as being a threat, even though they were carrying weapons, even though they were carrying flags, even though they had broken the law and gone over barricades, they weren't seen with the same threat.
Professor Langto, I wonder if you have a perspective on this. There are people out there who have a sort of, we see two different worlds, right? Some people look at what happened and see it very differently, much as the Black Lives Matter protest, right? Some people look at that and they see disorder and rioting, and other people see, the culmination, or not the culmination, but the next step in 400 years of attempting to resist. how do you bridge that?
Yes, that's a wonderful question. I have a lot of thoughts about this. And first of all, I want to say that I really appreciated that the caller, that Darren, I believe the caller was, that he called in and shared that perspective, because I think it's a wonderful opportunity, right? And I think part of his frustration was feeling like his voice wasn't represented in this show here today. And I loved what you did. You know, you asked more questions. And that's what I would say, you know, back to the question that you asked me earlier about collective unity and whether or not we can have that. I believe that we absolutely can by doing the very thing that you did, Brian, which is to lean in. To lean into the question, to ask more, right? To not assume perspective, to not assume what he meant. The insurrectionist at the White House, at the Capitol last week, I believe everyone would say, right? Most people would say that behavior was painful, difficult, it was unlawful, right? But what I hear the caller saying is that although that was an extreme, there are many others who understand why that would happen, and many, many others who don't. And I think that if we're going to move towards collective unity, we don't have to agree with the extremist. We don't. We don't even have to agree with those who get that. But what we need to do is to have the kind of radical empathy that can sit with the discomfort, right, of hearing a radically different perspective and ask more questions. Take a deep breath when you yourself feel offended by whatever the other person is saying, and ask more questions. Not because you agree, but because you really want to understand. Not because you want them to come to your side or come to your perspective, but you want to fully understand, what is it that you mean? What is the pushback? What is it that folks are feeling? And the extent to which, right, I am able to understand that about another human being. One group is able to understand that about another group, right? Entire parts of our society are able to understand that about entire other parts of that society. That's what's going to move us towards collective unity, right? It's that radical empathy, the radical listening to a diametrically opposed perspective in an effort to really understand, right? And then to hear each other. Now, I want to be absolutely clear. Right? What happened at the Capitol was wrong, and there needs to be a reckoning. I also know that we need to continue to really deeply hear each other, and that's what's going to help move us to collective unity, right? Hearing each other and a reckoning, right? The reconciliation can only come by truly understanding each other's perspectives, but also a reckoning. So that's what I would say to that. I know that it probably brought a lot of feelings up for all who are listening. And what I would say is to pause, right? Notice your feelings, acknowledge your feelings, and take a deep breath and listen some more, ask some more, move towards radical empathy, because that's what's going to move us towards collective unity.
We need to take a break in about a minute and a half here. So I do want to play another of the voicemails we got in. And we are still taking your calls at 800-222-9455 with Mary Mitchell, who's a columnist at the Chicago Sun-Times, and Professor Cynthia Lubin-Langtu, who is at the Chicago School of Professional Psychology. Before we take a break, let's listen to Nathan in DeKalb, who had this to say shortly after the events of last Wednesday.
I'd first like to say that I'd like to thank Adam Kinzinger, our representative, for standing up to Trump in these recent days, but I'd like to ask him where he was this time last year during impeachment. You know, there's a lot of political parties in Europe that get bad press here in the United States, such as the Alternative for Germany Party in Germany, obviously, and Fidesz in Hungary. And I'd like to focus in on them specifically. That party has seized power in that country through elections, and then ruthlessly have dismantled many freedoms and rights in that country. And that's a country inside the European Union, supposedly preventing it from falling backwards in its scale on democracy. But as we can see here in the United States, it can happen. And we need to be on guard against any democratic backsliding in going into the 2020s.
All right. Thank you, Nathan, for that call. Listeners, we still want to hear from you. 800-222-9455. 1-800-799-4555 is the number. We're going to continue talking about what happened last week in the U.S. Capitol. We're going to be talking about that radical empathy and listening that we were just hearing about from Professor Cynthia Langtu and columnist Mary Mitchell after the break. This is The 21st. Stay with us. This is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. On today's show, we are reacting to the mob that stormed the U.S. Capitol last week. We are taking your calls at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. We're also continuing with our guests who have been with us for the hour. Professor Cynthia Lubin Langtu is in the Department of Clinical Psychology at the Chicago School of Professional Psychology, and Mary Mitchell, who is a columnist, editorial board member at the Chicago Sun-Times, recent inductee into the National Association of Black Journalists Hall of Fame. I want to go back to the phone lines now. 800-222-9455 is the number. And Joe in Peoria, you're on the line. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you. Enjoy your show. I have not heard the word fascism mentioned. And I think, unfortunately, a lot of people don't understand how fascism works in the world. I'm an educator. Unfortunately, our school system has not taught this and taught people to think for themselves. But what we're seeing is fascism and coup. And you can't get people to understand what a coup is because they don't know history. But often these fascist regimes are not successful at their first coup. They keep attempting. So I would ask, and that's what I ask my friends who are Trump supporters, please research fascism. The other thing I would like to say is that I'm of the Lakota Nation. When my people stood at Standing Rock on their own land to protect the water necessary for life, they were attacked with water hoses and freezing weather. They were beaten, shot, tased. They were all unarmed. And that was what happened in the United States. Also, I participated in the Black Lives Matter march here. It was very peaceful, upbeat, unifying. The people who did the vandalism here in Peoria turned out to be plants. I think maybe upwards of 8 people were arrested who were white people who had nothing to do with the Black Lives Matter. They were opportunists. So most of the Black Lives Matter marches and other protests have been peaceful. People have been unarmed. So this, to me, is inconscionable. I think that if the people who had gone into the Capitol building understood fascism, understood the weight of what their attack against democracy meant, they would be terrified by their own actions. So trying to understand uneducated, ignorant people and sympathizing with their views is not what we need. I can't imagine sympathizing with Nazi perpetrators, so I don't sympathize with this.
Okay, Joe, thank you. Thank you for the call. I will say, if you want to point your friends to 21stshow.org, last week on Thursday, the day after this happened, we had on an author, a Yale philosophy professor named Jason Stanley. His book is called How Fascism Works, and we went into some of these very topics last week on the show. So you can point your friends, if they want to check it out, to our podcast at 21stshow.org. You can listen to the episode online there. I do want to pick up on something, Mary Mitchell, that Joe said. She mentioned she's a member of the Lakota Nation. And you picked up last week in your column after this happened, and you mentioned it today as well, but I want to go a little deeper on how you think these protesters might have been treated if they had been chiefly a black crowd. Right, just to be blunt about it. How can you expound on that?
Well, it's the first thing, of course, I noticed, and a lot of my friends noticed, and people that I talked to afterwards noticed, is that when protesters were allowed to get through that first barrier, they were not confronted with the kind of force that we've seen used on with protesters in the Black Lives Matter movement. And what I mean by that is you saw police, we have video showing, and I'm in the Chicago area, we have video showing police swinging their clubs, police using their shields, using their body, and being very forceful with demonstrators. You did not see that. I did not see that. And I looked, I couldn't believe it. I was like, they are actually being allowed to get up the stairs. They're actually being allowed to break down a door. And it's a miracle. If this had been the Black Lives Matter protesters, I believe that there have been a lot more casualties than one woman being shot. I think that first row of people who went in there would have been shot. So I just, it was a public, blatant, very visual demonstration of the differences between policing when it comes to people of color and when it comes to white demonstrators or protesters.
I definitely hear you on that, Mary. I wonder, do you think was the answer for the Capitol Police to have been more brutal? It seemed like a lot of them were just outnumbered and outmanned. A lot of them didn't even have any sort of riot gear on or anything like that, like you're describing.
Right, but it gets down to the very root of the problem. If this had been a protest led by black demonstrators, I think that the police themselves would have been more prepared to deal with it. They would have had the riot gear. They would have had more people out there. They would have had. They would have stopped the first line of people from getting through, as opposed to thinking this was not a threat. And that's where they made their fatal error. And I don't think they would have treated white protesters like that. Now, let me just divert this conversation for a second, because this came right after we had a national story of a white woman in a hotel accusing a 14-year-old boy of stealing a cell phone and getting very violent in her protest, okay? But if that had been a white kid, I don't think she would have just out and out accused him like that. That's the kind of environment we are living in today, and that's what we saw blatantly on television across this nation when we saw how these protesters were allowed to get by the police.
Yeah, and I think that we're going to continue to hear about this, and this is something that's going to be studied and reported on for a long time to come, the sort of lack of preparation of the police even going into this weekend. And was there racial bias in that? Was there something else going on in terms of the lack of federal preparedness for this? I read there's a historian who studies social mm-hmm. movements. He was out there observing, and he said that, and he's been to a lot of protests in D.C. as an observer,
okay.
and said that he saw more police presence at a March for Science, which featured Bill Nye, the science guy, who was the speaker. He saw more police presence in D.C. for that than he had for the events last week. I want to.
And so you have to ask yourself why?
Yeah.
Why would that be?
Yeah.
Why would that happen?
Yeah, good questions. I want to also go back to Professor Lang to something that our caller Joe said a moment ago, talking about, you know, the idea that this is a fascist movement. And I mentioned we had that guest on last week, and it sounded like she just doesn't want to say, okay, that's not worthy of discussion. I wonder what you would say to that, right? You were preaching radical empathy and listening even when it's uncomfortable. Where do you draw a line? Is there a line to draw and say, you know what, those views are so beyond the pale of what I want to consider that I'm not going to do that? How do you make that distinction?
Yeah, first of all, thank you. I want to affirm what Jo shared, you know, by sharing her own protesting, you know, at Standing Rock and with the Black Lives Matter movement near where she lives, and sharing her voice through protest. And I think one of the things that she said that I want to clarify, so when I talk about radical empathy, I want to clarify that what happened at the Capitol last week, I denounce that, right? And I think that we all should. It was wrong, it was unlawful, and those people violated not only the Capitol, but they violated our public trust. It was wrong, and they need to be held accountable. I think what I was speaking to was the fact, and they were extremists, right? And they need to be held accountable for their actions. But the caller before, Darren, was talking about the fact that those extremists did what they did And they are part of a much larger and maybe not as extreme, but really varied perspective, and that many people aren't feeling heard, right? And I understand what Joe is saying. And so I'm not saying that we should sympathize with those who have opposing positions and really also harmful positions to our well-being. What I'm saying is that it's important if we're going to move towards collective unity that we have an empathy, right? That we have an understanding of another person's perspective. It doesn't mean that we don't hold them accountable. It doesn't mean that we don't let them know that that's not okay and that we don't have boundaries. The other thing that I would say, right, is to highlight what Mary Mitchell and Joe were highlighting is the racialized trauma represented here. And people of color in particular, I heard from so many folks who watched, you know, people who didn't look like them storm our Capitol, knowing that if it had been them in their skin, right, or their family members that look like them, that were brown and black, that they would not have done so with safety. And I think that highlights the racialized trauma that people of color in this country have experienced for generations upon generations upon generations. And what I would say in terms of that piece is that when you're in the midst of your pain and trauma, right, like that may not be the time and is not likely the time that it would be appropriate to sit and think about having empathy for someone else and their perspective. What I would say is if we're going to move towards something different, that we have to be able to find places and spaces where that happens in a way that's safe and keeps the emotional integrity, particularly for people of color who are experiencing the racialized trauma, right? And so if somebody is experiencing pain and then being harmed by something someone else is saying in their perspective, then it's not time to have that conversation. I would not encourage anyone to sit with someone else who's going to harm them with their words. Somebody who doesn't believe that your humanity or your integrity is in place, that is not a place for a conversation. So I would say that's the place to draw the line. If you cannot be in conversation with someone who cares about your integrity as a human being, it's not a place that's safe for you to have a conversation, and I would not encourage that. But I believe that there are spaces that we can have those kinds of conversations. And I was talking to many people this weekend about faith communities and wishing and hoping that their faith communities would respond, because our faith communities have varied perspectives. And faith leaders have an awesome opportunity to help folks sit, right, with a common ground of whatever their faith is, but maybe different perspectives around social justice, to have conversations of empathy. So I would say finding places where it's safe and actually helpful, right, to listen to another person's perspective, where your integrity will be in place.
Yeah.
So I would encourage faith leaders to do that as well.
Faith leaders, and as we've heard throughout the hour, people want to hear from elected officials too. And we happen to have one.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we happen to have one who called in to the show on line three, Karen in Normal. Thank you for holding. Welcome to the 21st.
Yes, thank you. Yes, I am an elected official here in Normal. And to me, one of the most telling things about last week, as Mitt Romney pointed out, it was a failure of leadership, a failure to tell the truth. I am serving with some individuals who feel it their mission to be a conduit for individuals who are not heard. But as Mitt Romney was pointing out, we need to tell the truth. Everyone is entitled to speak what they believe. But as a leader, I believe it is my responsibility to do the research, to ask questions, to find out what is the truth, and to stand up and not be afraid to say that truth, even to individuals who don't believe it or are uncomfortable hearing it. Having the silos of so many disjointed news sources where there are only echo chambers is very, very problematic. And I promise not to represent people for what they thought was going to happen, but to say, I will show up. If you have something you want to say, I will show up to listen, but I'm not going to make a guarantee that what you believe in needs to be promulgated as the action that is taken by the majority.
Okay, thank you so much for calling in, Karen, and thank you to everyone else who called in to our show today. I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there. I want to thank, as I said, everyone who called in, and especially Professor Cynthia Lubin-Langtu, who is a clinical psychologist at the Chicago School of Professional Psychology, and Mary Mitchell, Sun-Times columnist, Hall of Famer in the National Association of Black Journalists Hall of Fame. Thank you both so much for being with us today on the 21st.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that is all the time we have. The 21st is produced by Anna Casey and Ryan Wild. Chantal Vaca is our engagement producer. Our interns are Zainab Qureshi and Brielle Scullark. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. We'll talk to you tomorrow.